Greg Marshall comes over to the Western Mustangs and takes over as head coach in 2007. From 2007 until 2023, there has only been two Yates Cups that did not have Western in them. Just two.
Well, this has been the last episode of At the 55.
Coincidentally, do you know what those 2 years were?
You and me, brother. Of
Yeah,
course
they
I know.
were.
What are
They
we
were you
talking
and me,
about here?
2012, 2014.
Hello and welcome to At the 55, your home for OUA football. Me and Tom are back on the mics at the pinnacle of the exit meeting series, episode 11, which you all know means it is Western week. It is our opportunity to talk about those Yates Cup champion, pardon me, those three time, those back to back to back Yates Cup champion Western Mustangs. There's no special guest. It's you and me, Tommy. So with all the gusto I have in my chest, how the heck are you doing, my friend?
I'm always doing well anytime I get a chance to talk OUA football with you, my friend. And yes, it's now time to talk about the Western Mustangs. And I'm sure there's a lot of Western fans who have been waiting for us to talk about this team and take our comeuppance, as it were, as we picked against them a couple of times here. But as we'll get into, I think we were pretty justified in making those picks.
Yeah, and you know, there's so much that we'll get into, and it's kind of nice that it's just you and me on this one because like there's so many directions. I don't even have my first moment lined up, my first point really lined up of where I want to go with it. I figure the conversation will all kind of come to fruition. I'm sitting here, if you're watching on the YouTube feed, with my Western University t-shirt in honor of this great program. I did my Faculty of Education training there, and as they say, you got to pay the devil their due. But so this team, like, it's amazing where we go back to the conversation we had with Jack, not last week, but in our preseason pods with him, and we're both looking at the end of the day, it's hard to pick against Western, and he's highlighting the fact that not only is this Laurier team so strong, and as we saw throughout the year, there are many teams, and as you've been following along with the exit series, hopefully it's been that much more apparent. There are many teams sitting at this table, knives out, staring right at the purple ponies, that to do the three-peat, to do what no one has done before, would be miraculous. And Tom, when we go through this schedule, as we did this year, there are so many moments where it felt like, oh, you know what? Yeah, this is where they falter. And then they get to the playoffs and they don't skip a beat. We'll go through the games in the regular season. We'll go through the playoffs. But when you reminisce on this year for Western, like, it's one thing to look through the schedule and say, well, that Mac game at home, you know, Carlton on the road was a little, you know, iffy. That Queens game, they sneak all these things. Windsor plays them close, that Laurier game. But once it came time to playoffs and the money was on the line, the chips were on the table, this team didn't flinch through the OUA playoffs. Is that just a function, in your estimation, of the stature, of the know-how, of the fact that they remained undefeated and had these games at home? Does it speak to maybe some way that they take the regular season to not play their hand? What do you make of this where, again, as much teasing as I got being at that Laurier game at the end of the regular season, having picked them, no one can honestly, unless you want to just admit you are a huge Western homer, question the integrity of our picks, thinking that, yeah, Laurier could have beaten them because obviously they could have. What is it when this team hits the playoffs? Is it something is it a switch? Is it a flipping of a switch? Is it them keeping something in the tank? Is it that know-how? What do you chalk it up to with this team?
Honestly, I think it starts in the regular season with the mentality that's there and the coaches that are there. There's a reason why Greg Marshall is arguably one of, if not the greatest U sports football coach of all time. The dude knows how to win. He knows how to get his players prepared for things, and they go out and they execute. There's a lot of games in this regular season that were very close. You already talked about the McMaster game. Carlton gave them fits. Queens came down to a very infamous final touchdown. So there was a lot of things going on in that regard. But there's something to be said about the fact that they just found ways to win. And now when this team is used to having 10, 11, 12 game seasons, making it to the national semis, making it to the Vanier Cup, you almost use that time. Maybe there's a little bit more time to be a little rusty, or maybe there's more time to get the wheels going here. Because like you said, when the playoffs happen, that's when we really see them start to come on, and that's when we see them start dominating against Queens again, and they did their thing against Laurier in the Yates Cup and that. So I think there's a lot of things to be said about at no point in time, even against this Queens team when they were down with seconds to go here, did I ever get a sense that Western was panicking. Whether you want to call it arrogance, I call it extreme confidence. Those ponies at no point in time thought that there was a game that they were going to lose. Maybe the national semis, and we'll get into that later on. But there's a confidence here that you can come back from anything. We can finish this game and we can win. And I think that starts first and foremost from the coaches, the coaching staff, and just the atmosphere around the program.
Yeah, you know, when I was at Guelph, and of course you and I being contemporaries, I'm curious what your feel on this was, where it always seemed like, because we had pretty good success against Western. We won that Yates, but even before getting to that game in 2015, like, we had a pretty good record against them. And, you know, that Greg Marshall piece has been the consistency throughout that, as well as some of the other components. But it always felt like this team knows how to just beat up on some of the lesser than teams. But if, you know, whoever it was that year, whether it was us at Guelph, you at Mac, a couple years when Queens was competitive, and Western certainly had their opportunities and their times where they still beat the crap out of all of us, where sometimes it felt like, no, if you can give them a good shot, they don't necessarily know how to punch back, that they are just so dominant that they almost lack that experience of being in those close games. And I guess I say all that in saying that one of the major touch conversation points when we spoke with Jack about how impressive Laurier was this year was that factor of, yeah, you can look at that Queens game for them off the jump, the 1-point win they sneak out of Richardson Stadium with. You can look at the Carleton win at home with Carleton giving them fits. And of course, at the end of the day, both those teams, as it reflects in Western schedule, were very, and just at the end of the day, and when you look at these teams, great teams, really strong teams. But that we looked at that and said, well, Laurier's learning how to win these games. They're in these games tight, but then they'll beat up on Guelph, and they'll beat up on Waterloo, and they'll do their thing against Mac and all these pieces. It makes them a formidable team when it comes down at the end of the day. And so when we look at Western, it would be unfair, reputation what it is, putting that aside, to look at the season they had and not say, wow, but you know what? They shut the door on Mac when they were perhaps coming back for a comeback. Again, that 34-22 final was a pick six, a Max Nixon, I believe, pick six on an attempted game-tying drive by Mac in the fourth quarter that made it the final score be what it was, right? You look at that Carleton game, the Queens game, obviously. Like, the fact they were coming out of these games, and I wonder, does that lead, like, that must factor in as well when we look at this, because we can't say that one that about Laurier, that was what made them what they were, that they were in these close games, and not also give Western their due on that, no matter what the record is historically that this team blows people out.
Yeah, I think you have to take a look at that whenever you're talking about these Western Mustangs, and that, you know, one of the biggest things, and I think it kind of leads into exactly what you're talking about here, that really impressed me from this entire year is the second half adjustments that were continuously made throughout the entirety of the games here. You can see it, especially on the defensive side of the ball here, where maybe they would have given up a few points in the first half or so, but the second half, typically anyways, the door was shut. Paul Gleason does a hell of a job on that defense in terms of making adjustments, getting his guys ready to go. And once again, the confidence builds into, you know, we're Western, we can come back, we can change the game plan mid-game and get forward into this. I believe it's the, I'd have to double check it, but I think it was the Laurier game. Anyways, there was one game, I'm thinking of the Montreal game in the national semifinal. While yes, they did lose that game, in the second half of the 29 points, Montreal only scored 5, and that's in the fourth quarter near the end of the game. So they obviously were on their heels, whatever else, but they made those adjustments. They came back into it, and that Western defense in particular really, really impressed me throughout the entirety of this game, this season here. when they needed stops, when they needed to come up big, oftentimes they did. And I think that once again boils back into the same things that I was kind of talking about before. The coaching staff there is seasoned. They really know their stuff. They've seen a lot of things. And the players they get, like it or not, are some of the best in the province and sometimes in the country. So they're able to make those adjustments and make those things pretty consistently.
Well, let's talk about some of those players. And, you know, as often as we do with Western to talk about the weapons on the offensive side, and they certainly had them, and we'll get to those players in specific. Yeah, this defense was, and maybe this again speaks to the state the OUA is in right now, where we can have a conversation with Western and almost be, oh, yeah, Western's still flippin' believable because we have a defense in Windsor that was one of the best, if not the best, in Canada all year round, in Queens, who was banged up, and at the end of the day we're still so formidable at Laurier and in Western, that big four that was obviously kind of the big four of the OUA, and they're right there in the mix. And you know, we can start, I think, as strong as that linebacking core is, we'll get to those guys. To me, the name with this defense has a start in that defensive secondary in Jackson Finley. And we've had this conversation. You brought it up when we were talking Laurier just last week of how do you replace a guy like Ife Onyemenem, the Max Carbonneau replacing James Peter at Ottawa. And you have Jackson Finley stepping in for the reigning defensive player in the of the year in Daniel Valente Jr. and just leading this defense where it's the standard Western model where it's just the sum is greater than its parts at so often, where you don't really get to those moments to recognize these individuals, that this well-oiled machine is just going to do its thing. It'll make the adjustments it needs, and it'll shut down whatever it needs to do to pick up that win. And then, of course, in that linebacking core and so many of these other names, but then you look at that, so many of these other names in the defensive secondary, but then that linebacking core of Riley McLeod, Lawrence Bowers-Cain, and Max Nixon, where just the formidable nature of that, and you know, you add on some of these guys on the back end. Really, it was maybe on that defensive front where we were a little less than blown away. But again, when the chips are on the table, and we're sitting here being like, well, you know, at the end of the day, if you're giving Elgersma time and Western hasn't been getting after the quarterback, guess what Western does? They sack Elgersma for more sacks than they had accomplished. Western, that is, all season long in their other games. So it's numbing from our standpoint, where we're trying to like figure out, okay, what have you done? What can we expect you to do, and all these things. And then they're just like, well, too bad, because we're Western and we'll figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why when you look at the team stats across the OUA here, and you look at defense, you know, Queens comes, there's got a lot of stats that jump off the page, Windsor, Laurier, and Western's there, and they're certainly in the top five. They're number four in the points per game aspect, at least. But there's nothing that really jumps off the page when you're like, oh, wow, until you get to the interception rank. And they had more picks than any other team with 14 on the season. And that goes back to the strength of that defense. You listed off all of those guys, all of them cohesively are pretty damn good at what they do here. And while sure they may not be getting a lot of pressure with their top four, their front four guys, they don't really need to because the back end is so damn good at covering all of these star receivers. I mean, Richard Adubafor is one of those guys in there, and I had a chance to see him at the combine, and we'll talk about the combine at a later date here. But you obviously, you see the stats, you see whatever else, but he's a imposing figure. He's tall, he's got length, he's got strength and speed. And so when you get him like lined up on the line to press a receiver, nobody's getting off of him there. And then you've got Jackson Finley in the back, arguably all stars all across the board with the linebacking core that's there, Riley McLeod, Lawrence Bowers-Cain, Max Nixon. And they're just doing their thing on a consistent basis. Maybe they're not snuffing teams out as some of the old Western teams do, but it's not easy in any shape, way, or form to gain yards or points on these guys. So, yeah, I think the defense was really it wasn't sung enough, even by our standards. I don't think we talked about them a whole ton, but they were just so solid and they had a lot of really key guys in key areas that allowed them to, they finished the season 14 sacks, 5 fumble recoveries, or sorry, 14 interceptions, 5 fumble recoveries, and 11 sacks, along with 3 defensive touchdowns. Those are pretty solid and impressive numbers when you take a look at that across the board.
Absolutely. And, that D line still is one that gets to trot out Max von Mueldorfer. And what was so interesting in the way they were using him, whether it was as a product of just the variety of skills he brings to the table, or maybe just needing him to plug some holes for them or whatever, where you look at him just the way he's built, at 6'2", 285, but he's a monster. I actually got the chance to bump into him in the weight room at Western once, and he puts up like 4 or 5 plates on the squat rack like he's warming up. But his ability to move from that one tech to that three tech to that defensive end, even where he brings that versatility. He got a guy like Robert Panabaker at that defensive half position coming back off of spending some time with the Hamilton Tiger Cats. You got a guy like Jordan Murphy in there as well. And the thing that still blows my mind with his defense, and again, a guy that, and to your point, Tom, as a programming note, yes, we're into a pod sometime later in the week when you're hearing this one, kind of talking about the combine, some of the things that you were seeing there. A guy in Kojo Odum, who hasn't played in near 2 years, and I'll admit my bias in having met Kojo, and he's an awesome dude and I really like him. We had him on the pod a couple of years ago. But I go back to that national semifinal they hosted when they hosted Laval, leading up to the Vanier that was going to be in London, that was in London. And I still say, if Kojo Odum's in that game, you put him on Kevin Mattal and you tell Laval, hey, we're going to trust our best on your best, and we're going to commit more into the box because Laval was able to run it on them as well. Mattal was taking the top off the defense. They were all over sorts. This is a team that hasn't had Kojo for this span of years, and he probably is going to be back with the team because he's probably going to the next level. But where I want to go with this now, because I think, like we said, with the defensive line, yeah, they got Van Mueldorfer in there. They got Chinedu, who I believe was a MAC transfer, if memory serves, right in there. So I don't know if that's a straight transfer, if he's on a master's, or what the situation is there. But you look at some of the youth on this defensive line, and I want to bring that into then talk about the offensive side of the ball by way of the offensive line, because again, if only by having to compare their offensive line this year to what we'd seen in years past, it felt like with the exception of Eric Anderson being the best lineman in all of Canada, that it just didn't feel as dominant as we'd seen in years past. And maybe that's unfair because some of those lines that we had seen with the Philip Grahovics, the Zach Fries, the Elliot Beamers, that were kind of that glue of those two previous Yates Cup runs, some of those guys tying back to when they went to the Vanier, I think, was so dominant. But on that defensive line, you got young guys in Marcus Robinson, and I have my bias there having spent time at London South, but he was obviously one of the highlight recruits coming out of the London area, for sure. And then you also have another young guy in Malcolm Frazier, who I believe was Western's rookie or all rookie team pick. And we can, again, I won't jump over the offensive line as well, but it's one of those things where we say all these things about where Western is and some of the players that are graduating out, but that next generation, you can already see the seeds of that dominant line play, which, as we've said about Queens, and obviously you have to say about Western, is the lifeblood of what makes this team so consistently. You said it beautifully, where year after year, you look at those OUA first and second team defensive and offensive lines, they are riddled with Western Mustangs, Queens, Golden Gales. And whether we thought either of those sides of the ball were as dominant as we've seen them in previous years for this team, again, you're already seeing the seeds of that next generation start to sprout, having gotten reps on the defensive line, and we can transition as well into the offensive line as well. But it just It's bloody unfair, Tom. It's like
in every single one of these exit meetings, you and I have had the conversation about what are they going to do here? How is this going to happen here? How are they going to manage losing these guys? And certainly we have had that conversation as well. You talk about all of the players that we had on defense, whether those guys are moving on or not. But Western is consistently the one team in the OUA that is always next man up mentality, even though you just talked about it, replacing your former President's Award winner. Oh, just Jackson Finley, who stands on his head the entirety of this entire year and stopping opposing offenses and doing their things here. And I think it was something that you and I had talked about previously here, but it is worth mentioning the reason why you and I had so many like, oh, I don't know about this Western team, whatever, is not that they're not good. Obviously, Yates Cup champions this past year, we knew that they were good, but the gap between the number one spot and the number two or even three spot was much shorter this year than it was in previous years. And I think a lot of that comes back to these guys are really good, but they're missing those few like great players. In previous years, we talked about like the defense there is outstanding, but that you would have had on that D-line, you know, a pass rusher, an expert at getting to the quarterback, or just a road grader, a one tech that even though they may only be like 300 or 350 pounds, just seems they are an immovable object.
Rupert
which
Butcher.
Allows the linebackers, exactly, which allows the linebackers to run and do their thing untouched throughout the entire time. And we even talk about that O-line like we talked about a little bit here. Yes, Anderson, he's a freak of nature. We've talked about him the entire year. It is one of Zach and mine's favorite things to do when we're watching film, watching highlights, to just watch this man work and put people into the ground on a very consistent basis here. But that O-line, the dynamic of that seemed a little different here. Now, I think that goes back to the different style in which this year's Western Mustang offense was. They weren't nearly as run heavy. They really relied on the pass, and they showed that they could be pretty damn good through the air as well. But still, there was just a few things when you're looking at this, you go, that's not quite the Western team that we saw even just 2 years ago when they won the Vanier Cup. It's not. There's a couple of things that are missing here. And maybe that's more so of us just going, hey, there's some cracks in the armor. Maybe that's room for somebody else. But no, Western is as Western does, and they are typically the unbelievable team that they are, and they three-peat for the first time in, what, 20 years, 20-something years, something like that?
Yeah, whatever it was since, I guess, it was since, like, Jesse Lumsden,
yeah,
you know, pounding the rock for your boys at Mac, right? And
also
about
Greg
that,
Marshall, so.
He's kind of good at the football, right? Yeah, no, if you want to have a good time watching Western Mustangs on offense, find 61 and just glue your eyes to him. If you don't know anything about offensive line play, you can learn a lot and just have a great time watching Anderson do his thing. But, you know, you have guys like, you know, Keegan O'Neill and Alex Berwick in there, kind of these replacements for, you know, your Zach Fries and your Elliot Beamers in there. And I believe they both were, if possibly only Berwick, as still being all-stars this year, I think, like with Eric Anderson, true third-year guys. And so you look at that core, at least going into next year, and as we've talked about so often, on that offensive line, it's beyond just the individual talent. It's a unit that, you know, you will take five, and this isn't even the talent level we're referring to, but in theory, you will take five B to B plus guys that have played together and know each other, then, you know, two A plus guys, you know, maybe a B minus here and there, a guy who's in from a new program where you don't have that cohesiveness and maybe they click come the end of the year, but you're getting now this ability of these guys having played together. And again, with Anderson having still ended up missing a good chunk of time, you know, just from looking through the names on this roster and kind of letting my memory fill in just who we were seeing, guy like Phil Jeff, Sebastian Cibal, Philip Cotier, as far as even younger guys who were starting to get reps in relatively high leverage situations, getting to work in, get that chemistry going where, you know, we can see that core. Matthew Unstead as well, I believe, getting some reps in there. But getting that core looking towards next year, but as well seeing, okay, who's up next and who's watching this generation of guys and who's taking reps in practice on that scout team against this stellar defense, and how that's like, it's just, it's unbelievable. So, you know, because we'll obviously get to the skill position guys in the offense, and specifically, you know, with, you know, Keon Edwards having now played the last of his time at Western, you wonder, well, can these other guys, whether it's Yazbek or whomever, step up and be that guy? Well, if this offensive line as a unit is taking that jump, still with Anderson as that best lineman in all of Canada, it almost doesn't matter who's running the ball for them. But even still, there's huge talent in that backfield that we'll get to briefly.
Yeah, it's the classic conversation. And I think you and I spoke about this a while ago, but you look for comparisons in other leagues, and you see all the time there's running backs in certain areas, whether they're on certain teams in the NFL or that, and they demand X amount of dollars and they don't get it. And they've had all-star seasons, and then they go somewhere else where they don't have the same offensive line, and you see the production value fall, and you go, oh, DeMarco Murray, when you left the Cowboys and you had the all-stars that were there and you went somewhere else and you didn't have the same level of production. Well, that's because of your offensive line. And, you know, we talked about, yes, Eric Anderson is the best lineman on that offensive line. And while maybe they don't have the same dominance per se, three out of the starting five were all-stars this year. Eric Anderson being a first team, Alex Berwick and Keegan O'Neill being second teams. Okay. So three out of your starting five are OUA all-stars. It's still pretty damn good. It's pretty good. So it's still the same thing. Like anybody else, and I completely understand where the Western faithful were coming from when you look at this team on paper here, and they're like, what are these guys from at the 55 even thinking? You know, you're taking Lore over these guys. Like, what are you talking about? This is still Western. This is still whatever. We're the champs until you beat us. And you look at this and you see there's 10 all-stars from just Western alone on offense and defense, first and second team. And you look at, well, they finish the season 8-0 and they do all this stuff. But when you watch the details and when you compare them to the leagues and the teams that they have been, that's where things kind of come into play. But once again, that O-line is going to be damn good, especially with a lot of these guys coming back this year. Keegan O'Neill, same year as Eric Anderson as well, so he's only a third year. He's going to come back and they'll have more chemistry. Like, they're just going to get better and better consistently here, which for a Western team is terrifying to know that they went 8-0, they did a three-peat for the Yates Cup, and they're going to get even better. It's just Western gonna Western kind of thing. But I think we've kind of danced around the fact for a little bit here, but the offense was very impressive, led by one Evan Hillock.
Yes.
Now, we talked about Keon Edwards last year. He was the reigning OUA MVP. The records he broke, the unbelievable season that he had was fantastic. And he was still very good in this year. Don't get me wrong. But the Western offense changed fundamentally to finally focus in on Evan Hillock. And I think a really big piece of that was their last year national semifinal loss to the eventual Vanier Cup champion in the Laval Rouge Or, and having that pass game really be exposed. You know, I don't really think that last year being 2022, they had guys in the OUA that could consistently stop the run, whereas Laval could. Laval came out, they stopped the run, and then we saw, you and I were watching it going, hey, the passing plays that they're running here for Western, a lot of them seem to be play action, and they're like, the playbook obviously isn't opened up. It's not a, like, Coach Marshall still calls the majority of the plays for that offense, and that offense hasn't changed all that much from 2009 when he had Michael Faulds in there. So what's going on here and all this? And so this year, almost purely based off of that, they take the reins off of Evan and he does his thing. I mean, now we talked about how impressive it was that Taylor Ogusma did his thing with the teams that he played against and whatever, but Evan Hillock still, He throws for 2,439 yards, 19 touchdowns, three interceptions during the regular season, with a 70% pass completion rating. Like, he's making smart throws. He's not forcing it into windows. Now, he's got some phenomenal people to throw to, and Mohsen Jamal, Savon Mamet-Jones, Seth Robertson, and so on. But still, like, I loved everything that I saw from Evan and what he was doing here. We had him pegged to be one of, if not the OUA MVP, but Taylor Elgersma just completely took it away with some of the stuff that he did this past season. But still, I think Evan is consistently one of the best quarterbacks in the league, not just the OUA, but in U sports pretty consistently here. And it was really funny. We talked about it before about how teams in the OUA seem to take off of what Western seems to be doing. So if Western's going to be a hard running team, you got to be able to stop the run. And that really, if you want to get out of the OUA, beating Western is kind of the formula that your team has to adopt in order to get there. And now Western changing that up entirely, not to say that you don't have to worry about the run, because you absolutely do. Keon Edwards is still back there and he's still one of the best running backs in the league. But then Evan Hillock comes out and goes, sure, load up seven or eight in the box. Watch what I do to you guys. And he picks them apart and he kind of does his thing here. So it was awesome to see Western not be stuck in their ways and learn from, hey, you know what? You're right, Laval. We didn't give Evan enough play calls or enough options in the pass game. So here we go. Let's change this up and let's let this guy loose.
And I even go back to the day I got to spend watching their training camp practice and just drinking in how just that I'm trying to remember how I framed it, but where there was a looseness to their approach to it, but you could tell that they were so on assignment with everything that you can kind of allow that. But then even starting to see like them work in Keon as a receiving threat out of the backfield, which was like you think of him one-on-one with a linebacker in space, because he's also a guy that would return kicks for them, is so deadly. And funnily enough, you think of a team in Windsor where who has just been this darling, one of the darlings of the OUA the last 2 years, and of course with Coach Circelli, the Don, out there with his Western ties, and how they've created that immensely powerful run game and a strong defense, and how they're doing things. And not that it's a true facsimile of Western, but that it kind of, to your point, has this feel of being like, we gotta, all right, that's how you win games in the OUA. And then Western's over here being like, oh, that's so 2022. We're over here in 2023 now, like throwing the rock and slinging it out to all our guys. Now, with that receiving core, obviously you mentioned those names and what a dynamic trio that was, none more so than Savon Magne-Jones, if only. Well, if only because, like, look at the numbers, watch the film. He's amazing. But you have that, the STM connection with Hillock, St. Thomas More, out of the Hamilton area. But he's, I believe, going to be graduating out or getting drafted this year. You have a guy in Mohsen Jamal who's going to the CFL National Combine along with Max Nixon and Lawrence Bowers-Cain from that linebacking core that we were talking about. And so you look at this and you think, okay, like the worst case scenario of this is it's Seth Robertson as the only remaining guy. I know, as Tom shrugs rolls his eyes at the
Yeah, must
notion
be
of
nice.
that. Well, because then to that point, I want you to go off on your guy Seth, because I know what a big fan you are of him, and how couldn't you be? But then you add the fact that, again, just going to the youth on this team and those moments of just like, you crazy bastards, you did it again, where this young kid in Daniel Kabongo returning kicks for them, who is listed as a receiver, who I don't remember him catching a ball for them. I don't have the stats in front of me. But you think, okay, this guy is clearly explosive as all heck. You get him in space and he's going to make things happen. And you put him within this system with a quarterback who is super efficient, who is great at not locking onto one guy. And again, when the run game's probably going to be there again, you can say, we're going to have plays to just get Kabongo the ball in space. You know they're going to be doing things like running their play action and then just, oh, the defense, the corner's playing off. It's a quick bubble screen out there. He's got 7 yards to work with to go get us 10 or more so. So again, the worst case scenario And again, it's that ironic thing of worst case scenario, you have two guys going to the CFL, like boo-hoo. But you're only left with Seth from that big three they had. But now you're getting a guy like Daniel Cabongo, perhaps joining the ranks in there. And it's just, it's mind-boggling. But again, you're not even, like when we say you're left with Seth Robertson, and you know, obviously we've talked a little bit about all-stars and who were not all-stars and all-Canadians. Like this is a dude who, you know, just... has had a really spectacular run in the last 2 years with Western.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the way that they're set up, once again, you know about the run game. The run game could always be there. The offensive line that's up and coming, whatever else. The pass game is now really starting to take hold. And with Evan having a full year, and I mean, the guy, like we've been high on him ever since 2021. The guy goes out, he comes in after, Jackson White struggles a little bit, and they struggle in even going 3-0. I'm pretty certain he came in right around the halfway mark, and he finishes the year, and then he's the Vanier Cup MVP, and we're like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, he's pretty good as a rookie coming over and taking over, not even for the full season, and being the MVP in the Vanier Cup. Yeah, that's pretty standard. And then 22 happens, and they really lean on the run game more than anything, and I think they were doing the same thing in 21 as well, but they continue to do so, and the points pointed in. Now they open up in 23. Now going into 24, exactly like you said, Savon Magny-Jones and Mohsen Jamal are two phenomenal receivers. But Seth Robertson has been the go-to guy for touchdowns. Savon and Mohsen both finished the year with 5 touchdowns apiece, whereas Seth Robertson has 8. And some pretty infamous ones, especially in the 22 Yates Cup when he's hitting the oil thigh against the Queen's faithful in the end zone.
Love it.
But not only to mention Brady Masseri, he's going to be back as well for these guys. He had the next closest amount of catches with 24, finished with 294 in the air and 3 touchdowns himself. So you've got two guys who are going to have experience. Seth Robertson certainly poised to take over the go-to receiver in that secondary. And then you talk about a guy like a Daniel Cabongo who has the speed. Obviously, we saw what he could do in the on special teams, exactly like you beautifully said. And there's always going to be, if there's one thing that Western has, it's a list of skill players who are ready and willing to put on the purple uniform for the Ponies here. So I'm sure there's going to be somebody else who steps up into a great role. And once again, like you said, you've got a guy in Evan Hillock who's insanely accurate with his passes, who can put you in a position to be successful and lead you away from defenses or lead you into where you'd be the most successful in order to catch the ball or even get those yak yards. So I think, insanely, I think there's a lot of opportunity for this Western offense to get going. I do think that the first couple of games, unless they come out and they're given York as the game one again this past season, but I think the first couple of games, you might see a little bit of rust from the Western Mustang offense as they're plugging in new guys into different positions and try to get that rhythm going. But the one thing that I wanted to ask you, and I don't know if it happened during that training camp or whatever else, but all the guys that we listed, how electric must have one-on-ones or pass Skelly been in those Western training camps where it's the first team against the first team and you've got Evan Hillock, Savon Magny-Jones, Mohsen Jamal, Seth Robertson against Lowers Bowers Kane, Jackson Finley, Richard Adu before, like, holy God, those are some of the, like, talk about iron sharpening iron in those periods, eh?
Well, here's the thing, Tom, is that I was there in the afternoon and Western still runs your traditional two-a-day practices. My understanding was that morning they were getting after it. They were, you know, doing your full, ones versus ones, all the things that you're salivating, thinking about, as am I over here. And I caught more of their just polished type, you know, running through your specials periods, getting some indie work, all these types of things that they were doing in that regard. But yeah, no, it's incredible the competition that they have in there. And the funny thing is, we look at the lesson from that Laval semi loss and how it turns this team to say, you know what, we have one of the best quarterbacks in the country, we have all these weapons. Let's air it out a little bit more than teams expect us to. And now maybe they're losing some of these receivers. You still have one of the best in the business. You still have these great receivers in there. And yeah, you're losing Keon Edwards, which is huge. But then you almost wonder, like, again, with what we said about the offensive line, and again, going back to some of these names, combine names, you have a guy in Craig Coleman, their starting H-back, who is at the regional. If he comes back, and if you know anything about the way Western runs the ball, that H-back is arguably as important as anyone. And Coleman's done a fantastic job of playing that position for them, where you could just say, well, you have that, you know, those three names in O'Neal and Berwick, and of course in Anderson on that offensive line, that much more seasoned and experienced. Yeah, you're losing Edwards, but you have guys like Keanu Yazbek, Troy Thompson entering their fourth years, both who got so many carries because unfortunately Edwards was banged up this year. Then you got young guys like Ethan Dolby, like my guy, Marcel Phillips, who, Marcel, I know you didn't love everything I said about your boys this year, but you know I still love you through and through. Where all of a sudden it could be like, you know, as we kind of joke about whether it was Windsor being like, okay, let's play the Western model. We run the ball and everything. And now everyone's like in their offseason, be like, okay, here, we got to. They're passing the ball, this air out team. And then they come back and they're like, nope, we're back on our, you know what, we're just pounding the rock. That, you know, when we go back 2 years ago, when they're doing that no huddle of just bringing in running backs and they're just churning out first down after first down after first down. And then, yeah, guess what? Evan Hillock pulls one of those out of Yazbek's belly and there's Seth Robertson hitting the oil thigh in the end zone on a little play action, and he does a little shot over the middle. And yeah, your safety's playing up because they've just been churning out 50 yards on the ground in a 6 minute period. And by the way, now all of a sudden there's like only 5 minutes left in the, all these things where it's beyond belief. Let me throw this out at you, because like, let's, you're sitting there wearing Mac gear, I'm sitting here in this Western shirt, I got my jersey in the background, the ring's not too far. I had a hunch that, you know, I was, again, I'm trying to maybe lean into some of the prop comedy now that we're doing the videos a little more consistently. I got the Yates Cup sweater here if you were going to call me out for wearing this to begin with. So, you know, we haven't burst into flames yet being so exuberant about Western, if you're being honest. And again, I think we do a good job of trying to just like talk about what we see and have a conversation about it. But like, let's be real here. It's still Western. Like, everyone who doesn't cheer for this team is just has turned this pod off many minutes ago. And I'm not for that. So what is the impact in your estimation? And again, we'll do a pod talking about what you saw and experienced being in Waterloo, checking out the regional combine. CFL combine at the time recording is just a week and a half away, closer to 2 weeks, I suppose. But Kevin McNeil, out of the program now. He's over at Waterloo, defensive coordinator there, and he was doing special teams, he was coaching up D-line, and he was also a major recruiter. And it was a big thing, again, from the time I spent working in the London area at the Faculty of Education at Western, that at some of these schools, Kevin's there at all these games. He's a London guy. I think that's a major piece when one of your recruiters who has a reputation of having been in a lot of these programs, Yates Cups or Yates Cup when he's at Guelph and all these things, and he's from London recruiting these kids. He's out of there now. We talked about the impact special teams had with Kabongo. Maybe he's taking on more of a role on the offense. You have a guy in Brian Garrity who's been kicking so well for them. I think he's going to be gone. And then as well, that impact of him coaching up the defensive line. It's a pretty major loss. Again, I'm somewhat trying to just be like, hey, is there anything we can kind of poke a hole in here to be able to say, like, this isn't the four-peat, like, waiting to happen? Whether it's the McNeil piece of it or anything else, what is the thing that, you know, if we're going to pump the brakes on all the jubilance we're exuding here towards Western, that you might look to?
I think more and more, well, in this iteration of the Western Mustangs, we'll call it this era with Evan Hillock as the starter, they've only lost twice, which is crazy. But both of those times against teams from Quebec in the national semis. Now, maybe you look at the 2022 one as, oh, that's just an off one. That's Laval doing the thing. They're the reigning, they won the Vanier Cup that year. And to the same thing, Montreal does the same. But two different iterations of the Western offense, one that's very run heavy and one that's very pass heavy. And both of them getting exposed in different ways against teams from Quebec. I wonder now if teams from the OUA start looking at that game film, start taking a peek at that, seeing what are some of the similarities between what Laval did and Montreal did, and putting those things together. Not to say that we don't have enough outstanding coaches in the OUA to figure out their own game plan. And even like we were talking to Coach Steve Snyder a couple of podcasts ago in Queens, how close Queens has been in the past few years. You know, in the COVID year in 21, they get handled pretty good in the Yates Cup, in 22, something similar. And then this past year in that regular season, we talked about, yes, Western won the game, but it came down to a last second Hail Mary pass, which was very, very infamous. And shout out to Persevere for posting that and getting us some proper exposure across all of the American channels as well for the call. And obviously shout out to the Queens radio broadcast. I love to hear the passion in his voice, even if his team did lose. But regardless, you take a look at Queens has been getting better and better and better and closing that gap in terms of how close they are to getting over the Western Mustangs here. Now, obviously, in the playoff game, Western flexes their muscles and they get through Queens, admittedly a lot easier than they did in the regular season. But like we talked about before, the gap between Western and everybody else is starting to get slimmer. And other teams are starting to come back up. We're starting to see top recruits, not just starting, but top recruits are also going to these other teams. We're also seeing, hey, you've got some players here. You've got some guys here. And also, you've got some coaches now who know how to recruit. You've got a coach in K-Mac who knows that London area like the back of his hand here. And a lot of the success that was had at Guelph came from pulling London guys over to Guelph as well.
And just super quickly, teaming up with Coach Bertoia already. So, sorry, keep going.
100%, yeah. Man. But you have guys who know that London area, and they know how much of a hotbed for football talent is in London. So if you have coaches who know how to recruit, who know how to sell their program properly, it's a big deal. And so I really think that the OUA here, I don't think that there's that same level of intimidation that Western maybe had in the previous years. Certainly, like when you think back to like 2017, 2018, Chris Merchant's at the top of his game running through, and that offense and defense, those Western teams were unbelievable. And you got to think that there's a lot of teams, even the teams that are kind of at the middle to high end, who are like, oh my God, it's Western week. And now it feels this year, this past year, like Queens is chomping at the bit. Mac was chomping at the bit. Windsor, like there's teams now.
And Mac stinks.
Yeah, Mac stinks. They really do.
I'm sorry. That was mean.
But you have teams now who are like, we have a game plan here for Western. We know what we're doing. We just need to execute. And nobody has been able to execute at the same level as Western as consistently, but they're getting close. Past 2 years now, Windsor has given them damn good games, and they've been close. Queens closing that gap. Laurier's right there. They just need to be able to finish the game. So there's a lot of teams now who might be sniffing blood in the water and saying, yeah, they're the three-time Yates Cup champions. They are some of the best teams that Western has put together in this little stint here. Absolutely. Not taking anything away from them, but we could have had them. And typically it's like that coulda, woulda, shoulda is like, well, if the entire second half went differently, maybe we could have won the game. But like you look at Laurier and it's like, if we just keep Jerome Ramcourt from getting that last touchdown pass in the fourth quarter after Evan Hillock comes out, we win that game. If Queens doesn't give up a long bomb of a touchdown, they win that game. If Windsor has a little bit more of an offense, they could potentially win that game. So there's now like, it's not some unfathomable, oh, if we just had completely different players in the role, maybe we would have done better. It's now, if we would have executed on these couple of games here, if Mac doesn't throw a pick six going into the fourth quarter in their long drive and they put together one, that could be a dub right there. So there's a lot of things where if, and now ultimately, even with that whole little spiel I would have had, every single Western Mustang fan is going, well, shoulda, woulda, coulda, we're still the Yates Cup champs, and you absolutely are. You deserve all of the accolades that you have, but it no longer seems impossible to beat the Western Mustangs. That's my point.
No doubt. And And it kind of brings us back to that first point, though, where it's like they haven't been properly challenged. And I say this while also really racking my brain to think of if there was an example in the playoffs,
mm-hmm.
in the OUA playoffs. I guess since they lost to Mac in 2019, you lose the COVID year, the 2020 year, the COVID year. They go through pretty roughshod to beat Queens. The following year, they win again against Queens. And even you mentioning the you know them winning in Richardson Stadium, in Richardson Stadium this year, right? We haven't seen Queens really put up a strong fight, taking the show on the road to London. I mean, there was that lovely regular season matchup 2 years ago, the sellout night game. It was a beautiful thing. It was tight in the first half, but then as you're saying, Western just has this ability to turn it on in the second half, and it's that same thing. And here we are beating the dang at the 55 drone about all these things that like we're gonna nitpick about Western, but it doesn't change a dang thing, which is us being like, you know, can you get the let out a little earlier? Can you not move at a glacial pace to start some of these games? Even look at that U of T game. Where, like, to start off, it's like, why are you playing with your food here? You got Laurier coming up at 66-24. We come on a pod after that, and we're saying, like, well, you know what? Like, as far as 42-point losses go, U of T look pretty good in that one. Like, what the hell are we doing here? I look at that Ottawa game, 50-17 against a team that I absolutely adore. Sure, we can say it was Josh Jansen's first start, and that's worth a lot to say on this, but how does that lead to them hanging a 50 burger on your defense that old Zach here at the 55 talks so much, so glowingly about? And then again, despite all those things, they still get to the playoffs and they will still just bite your head off. And at the end of the day, like, I was going to say, the playoffs always go through London anyway. So like, even when it was Mac beating them in 19, when it was Laurier in 16, us in 15, you guys in 11, you know, it still ends up being there. So like, we haven't even seen whether or not, like, you know, maybe one of these games goes differently. Maybe Laurier goes 8-0. Maybe the Yates plays through Kitchener-Waterloo for the final. For all we know, they're still just going to do their thing. Like, it's just, it's unbelievable. It really is something to behold. Again, you have to look at the top with what Coach Marshall has been able to do with this program year in, year out. And what's so amazing, the kind of last thing I'll say on this, I'm not really sure where we'll take it at this point. When we look again at those teams champing at the bit, looking to have their shot at the crown, you have Laurier and you have your Western connections through there, obviously with Coach Falds, and I'm sure some other pieces off the top of my brain I'm not thinking of. You have Windsor with Coach JP the Dancer Selly there and his connections. You have Queens with obviously Coach Steve Snyder there. Waterloo, obviously they're not quite there, but you even go back to those Trey Ford years, but with obviously Coach Bertoia there at the helm. And again, I'm sure those, and you know, talking about now with K-Mac leaving, and again, I'm sure there's so many other connections that just off the top of my head, I'm not making right now. But it just, it's really, it's Greg Marshall's world. We just live in it. Mm-hmm. So it's probably as simple as that. At the end of the day, if Laurier picks up a Yates Cup this year, it'll be no doubt at taking it from Western. I would be hard pressed to see Western not getting back to a Yates, whether they win it or not. And if you're one of those Western faithful, you can still look at, say, the Evan Hillock era and be like, well, Vanier Cup, check. Yates Cups, 1, 2, 3, check. Okay, he lost to a Laurier team that was exceptional. Like, this is the thing where, like, at Western, we've raised the bar. We posted that clip of me being like, hey, Western, no one cares if you go 8-0. No one cares if you win a Yates Cup. You have now done poorly against Quebec teams going back now to, I guess, 2017. Let's step it up a little bit here. Like, that's who they're competing with. It's like when you talk about LeBron James's career in the NBA, it's like his legacy is competing with Michael Jordan. Like, he doesn't have to worry about his contemporaries. So at the end of the day, we're talking Western. I mean, what the hell are we doing, Tom? Like, what? Like,
yeah.
My goodness.
You want to talk about dominance here. I'll give you something that's, I'm sure, going to blow your mind. Greg Marshall comes over to the Western Mustangs and takes over as head coach in 2007. From 2007 until 2023, there has only been two Yates Cups that did not have Western in them. Just two.
Well, this has been the last episode of At the 55.
Coincidentally, do you know what those 2 years were?
You and me, brother. Of
Yeah,
course
they
I know.
were.
What are
They
we
were you
talking
and
about
me,
here?
2012, 2014. But how unbelievable of a statistic is that? That if, and you can talk about, oh, they're winning in London or they're not winning in London. From 2007 to 2013, 2023, excuse me. Western has played in every single Yates Cup except for two. That is an unfathomable frickin' statistic here. Greg Marshall is the best OUA, at least OUA football coach in all of history. The only person that he's really competing for in cross of all U sports is Glenn Constantine, who's currently still playing. And depending on how much more G Marsh has got in the tank, maybe he overtakes that too. If there's one coach that deserves a statue, it's
Yes.
Coach Greg Marshall. That there should be a statue of Coach G Marsh, and maybe with his entire family, because all of them are Western Mustangs and all of them won big games, out in front of the pavilion there, because the unbelievable track record that that man has in football is unheard of. Greg Marshall is the best OUA football coach of all time, and arguably U Sports of all time. And all of these years, all of this talk, everything that we've been saying is because, in some way or another, of him.
But I still think Laurier should have beat him twice this last season. Tom, I don't know, man. Shall we just wrap it on that? That was a pretty stellar note to close the Western exit meeting podcast with. What do you say?
I would say so. Ultimately, at the end of the day, nobody wants to hear, well, the entire season's going to be, it's a wash. It's Western going to be winning the whole thing. And while you and I genuinely don't think that, or we genuinely thought Laurier was going to win it this year, Western going to Western, and they're going to do their thing. Now, the one thing that I do want to say before we leave this, is there's been a lot of Western praise here. We have to talk a little bit at least about that semifinal loss, because it wasn't just a loss, it was an implosion. We talked about all the stats that Evan Hillock had. He only had three interceptions in the entirety of the regular season. He had three interceptions in that game alone. And I don't think that's necessarily his bad play. I think if anything, Montreal was ready for them. Montreal was creating pressure on Evan like he had not seen the entire year, even with the Tyson Hurgots of the world, Kalani Moosen, Mufuadi Ageli, all of the unbelievable D lines that they have gone against. They did not see the quality of pass rush that Montreal gave to them, and that completely disrupted everything that they wanted to do. Now, once again, to go back on the Western hype train a little bit here, the final score is 29-3 for Montreal, and it's a bad game for sure. But 24 of those 29 are scored in the first half, 17 of which in the second quarter. And the offense doesn't do the defense any favors there, for sure. But 5 points is all that that Western defense gives up, and that comes late into the fourth quarter here. So they gave their offense every single opportunity they could. That Montreal defense was on another level playing against these guys.
Allez les bleus, man. Allez les bleus. But, like you're absolutely right. And, again, that just goes back to the standard that we're holding this team to, where it just comes down to like, hey, look, you gotta, I say it somewhat tongue in cheek, but I do mean this where like we need to get, like, we need our OUA team back in that venue. And if I understand the roadmap this year, it's a bit of a rosier path. Shout out to the AUS and all the things you're doing out there, Coach Waterman with Saint FX and all that. But I believe the road goes through the AUS to the Vanier at Richardson Stadium in Kingston, which we saw live and direct, was a fantastic place. So whether it's Western, whether it's Laurier, and actually, you know, to that point you raised, you know, Evan Hillock led his team to 28 points in the second half against the Western team in that regular season. So, I mean, who was the real Heck Creighton winner this year? But no, you're absolutely right. That game was, you know, you and me, I think, had our we went to the whiteboard pretty quick in that one just to start drawing up just like our favorite concepts of running gap scheme and zone scheme plays, because it got so ugly so fast. But I think as coach, I think it was Coach Snyder who kind of turned to that team when we talked to him and just said, like, that was kind of your classic team of destiny, the way that things lined up for that team with the years the guys were in and sort of where they were all positioned. But yeah, that was a bad beat for all of us.
Yeah. Just
because
just the final note that I want to get to here. The reason it was so bad, three fumbles, three lost for Western. They lost all three of those fumbles, three interceptions, and five sacks, along with a list of other quarterback hurries and quarterback hits during that game there. That's what made that so, so brutal for us to watch, was the turnovers, was the amount of times that Evan is getting hit with no real time to throw the ball, and just it was a complete departure of what we've come to expect from the Western Mustangs here in this game. And as much as that was, you know, Montreal is doing their thing and they are impressive, don't get me wrong, I don't want to take anything away from the Caravan because they absolutely played incredible, but I would argue that that game was more so about Western imploding than it was about Montreal really doing their thing. And to a certain degree, because Montreal was really, really good. But like a lot of things in that one that were just head scratchers about it just didn't seem classic Western.
Yeah, it felt more like if that game was played like five more times, it should have just been a beat 'em up defensive battle. You know, one team winning like, I don't know, 14 to 10, like more often than not, both those defenses being so stellar. But hey, if we get that again, it'll likely be in a Vanier Cup, which at Kingston, we saw how that Montreal faithful came out to that one, and you know Western would come out in droves. So maybe that's what we'll be seeing. But if we've learned anything through this exit meeting series, it is that there are some serious contenders across the board, all staring, though, of course, at Western. And until they get moved from that mountaintop, doesn't matter what we think or what we see week in, week out, they are the champs until otherwise. Tom, this has been such a fun journey getting to go through all these teams. Shout out to all the amazing guests that were joining us to enlighten us on all the various aspects of these teams that we're privy to, or just the perspectives that we don't get to get watching it from where we get to tune in. Of course, Tom, just talking football with you, OUA specifically, is the light of my life. So it's been such a pleasure going through this process. Again, as a programming note, Tom and I are going to talk a little bit about the regional combine that he was live and direct getting to witness this past week at time of recording. Talk a little bit about the national combine coming up, what that might mean for some of these programs. And then, of course, we have a very special guest we're interviewing to serve the cherry on top of this exit meeting series. The MVP himself, Taylor Elgersma, going to join us to talk a little bit about what an amazing year it was for him, though I'm sure the first thing that'll be out of his mouth, though, if we learned anything from talking with Jack Moore, is could have done better. Tom, last words to you before we put the exit meeting series to bed.
Well, first and foremost, the being able to talk football with you, it's a very mutual street, my friend. It's only positive vibes on this podcast, especially between you and I. It's an awesome thing to be able to talk about something you are very passionate with another beautiful human being who is also just as passionate. So, yes, this is awesome. But yeah, the exit meetings have been some of my favorite stuff that we have done so far, and really being able to deep dive all of these teams like you and I specifically love to do. There's a reason why every single podcast we do is like minimum an hour long, because we will have so many things to talk about, so many angles and the history that you and I both have that we will love to bring to. But this one in particular is Really, I hope it's eye-opening for everybody else to kind of take a look and to see why we picked the way that we picked, what we were kind of seeing, what we were viewing, and then also just acknowledging how bloody good Western is and how good they have been for so many years. So Western Mustang's gonna Western Mustang, and in this case, that means winning Yates Cups, the three-peat champions. And yes, even though this series might be done for this offseason, we've got so much more coming for our listeners here. So we appreciate, as always, you tuning in and spending some time with us here, and we'll continue to have some more content for you.
Shout out to Dakota Vine. Shout out to Nate Hobbs. Shout out to Adam McGuire. Shout out to Coach Corey Grant. Shout out to Coach Steve Snyder. Shout out to Brett Hedges. Shout out to Jack Moore. And one last time, shout out to you, Tom Sterling. So we'll be talking a little regional and CFL, or pardon me, national CFL combine coming to you later this week, right here at the 55.